Hey, kids. The first thing I want to talk about is the Durbin apology. I saw it. The local LAABC affiliate made a huge deal about it today on the Midday News. The thing that struck me is he didn't look or sound apologetic. He looked scared. He sounded as though he was frightened to death that something might happen to him or his family. That was the first thing that I noticed. Not that he was caving, but that he was afraid. Afraid because he'd been threatened. I had no doubt about it. He was emotionally breaking down on the Senate floor in front of the entire country. The great shame is he didn't use that opportunity to expose what he and his family have been subjected to since his truthful comments. Truth needs no apology. But again, I'm feeling more and more like Alice every day, only now the looking glass is down the rabbit hole. Until we get control back, and I mean not just control of Congress, I mean we have to get control back of our own elections. Because until we get control over our elections, and I mean getting rid of the electronic voting, we'll never get control of the Congress again, or the White House, or anything else. It's done. Why, oh why, do Democrats keep caving? The second thing I want to talk about is the flag-burning amendment. First of all, why are they wasting time with this? Does it make anyone safer? Does it create any jobs? Give anyone health care? Clean the air, water, or make Social Security stronger? Does it bring our men and women home from Iraq faster? Does it save lives? No. It just limits our freedom. Freedom. The one thing the flag stands for in the first place. Pathetically ironic, eh? Here's what I propose. I say we all burn flags this July 4th to celebrate how free we are right now, since all that is about to change and what the flag stands for is about to be rendered meaningless. How awesome would that be? A flag barbecue coast to coast to celebrate freedom. I say we do it. I say we make flag burning patriotic. As patriotic as fireworks. Why not? That's all for this week. I'm Tally, and this has been La Perspective Bomb.
All right, got a letter to the editor for you. I think the letter writer is stupid. His name is Gene Thomas Gomokia. The big headline that covers all the mail: soldiers' high divorce rate hurts recruitment too. I think we could all agree on that. Gene Thomas Gomokia writes, while recent articles in USA Today have addressed the high rate of military divorce and low rate of recruitment, the relation between the two seemed to go unnoticed. Is that true? Probably not. The failure of the Defense Department to provide troops with effective tools that can strengthen and save their marriage, what's the Defense Department got to do with their marriage, is resulting in both higher divorce rates and lower retention rates. Strengthening marriages promotes retention. By enhancing retention, recruitment goals become far more attainable. Gene the monkey go moke you. Well, no, that's stupid. The Defense Department has got no business strengthening effective tools for your marriage. I got an idea. A, why don't you stop sending them into quagmires where they're likely going to be put through a meat grinder and sent home destroyed, if not dead? I think that's a good number one. Why don't we put the Pentagon in charge of winning wars and only fighting the wars that need to be won? And we'll leave the marriage counseling to the marriage counselors. I think that's a good idea. Another thing you could do was, if you would only fight wars that made some sense, I think logically you would get more people to sign up. They say, and granted it was a million years ago, but after Pearl Harbor was attacked, they said you had to wait hours or days to sign up for the military. People wanted to sign up because we were attacked. We had a reason. We have motivation. We had incentive to get in the armed services and fight back because we were attacked. But the idea that just because Bush wanted to steal a bunch of oil and make some money for Halliburton, well, why should I sacrifice my life, my arms, my legs, my sight, my memory, my marriage? Why should I sacrifice all that so Halliburton can make some more money? That makes no sense. The idea that you're going to send a guy over to Iraq for, say, 9 months, and if he survives, he comes back and does, we'll guess, a month. Then you send his ass back over there for another 9 months. Then he comes home for a month, and he's a little more disturbed than he was the first time, and then you send him back to Iraq for a third time and a fourth time. Well, yeah, his marriage is going to hell, because every time he comes back, he's going to be a little jumpier, he's going to have a little less sense of humor, he's going to be a little quick on the trigger. Someone slams a car door outside, he's going to jump up out of a chair and grab for a weapon on his waist that isn't there. But this is what happens. If we were fighting a war that the public was behind, if government wasn't lying to us, and it was a just war, people would sign up. People would want to protect America, or whatever, that hand job, promote democracy. That might have worked on some people, wouldn't have worked on me. I don't care if Fallujah's free. I'm sorry, I'm an evil man. I'm a greedy man. I don't want to die to free Fallujah. I'd rather live my life with Mrs. Bart. Sorry, I'm just that way. But if Oklahoma was attacked, yeah, there's a chance I might throw my old ass into some pickup with my Glocks and go shoot some bad guys wherever the attackers were. But that ain't going to happen. So, I think, Mr. Gene Thomas, go milk you. Dude, I think if you would get the Pentagon out of the marriage counseling business and have them fighting effective wars that have the public behind them, you'd probably do a little better. Letter number two, mercenary move. The Army's enlistment bonus of $20,000 for some jobs is already quite hefty. Oh, this is kind of a sad letter. Now it is very likely to increase to $40,000 for some jobs, and in some cases $50,000 extra, I believe, in home mortgage help. I can easily imagine a family living way below the poverty line, encouraging a son, or hey, two sons, three sons, to enlist for the sake of that money. Pay off the mortgage, buy a better car, some appliances, some furniture, get a nice roast on Sunday. Well, he's kind of going a little far there, but yeah. What if you live absolutely shit dirt poor? You know, there's an Eminem song out. He redid the Mockingbird song, which doesn't sound like the Mockingbird song, but he talks about how he was saving money for his daughter's maybe Christmas. And because he lived in a really poor neighborhood, someone broke in and stole his money. And then when her birthday or Christmas or whatever came around, his mother had some money to buy her a present, but her dad didn't. And he cried because he wanted to do something good for his daughter, and he couldn't because he lived in a shitty neighborhood where you were likely to get broken into. And they got broken into, and they stole his money, so he had nothing. And he was living a life of despair. Well, if you go through a lot of that, I can imagine you would probably do most anything to get out. Wouldn't it be nice to live in a house that wasn't broke into every time you put $2 $5 bills together? So, a really poor family, I can see some mother or father putting some pressure on the kids. Why don't you boys go sign up in the military? If the three of you sign up, we'll get $150,000. Boy, in Oklahoma, you buy a nice-ass house for $150,000. And hopefully you kids will come back from Iraq and we'll be okay. But see, that is undue pressure put on the kids. So yeah, that makes it a mercenary move. It's maybe what they have to do. I mean, they're trying to avoid the draft because those idiot Democrats won't call it Bush's war. Now you watch, like the guy said on the page the other day, this is going to be in Bill Clinton's war if they don't fight back. Jesus. Closing out letter number two, there's nothing new about mercenaries. Before 1900, many countries, especially small city-states, employed mercenaries, but it seems new for the United States, Harry Norton and Altadena. Harry, you are correct. When the government starts offering people massive amounts of money they could never get any other way to join up and fight, yeah, you're probably going to get some of that. But then what do you do when you sign up and you get your $150,000 for the three kids and mama goes and buys herself a nice house? Now your ass over in Iraq getting shot at. And trust me, they're not going to give us $50,000 for the house. They're not going to give that away for a 2-year hitch. That's an 8-year hitch. So if your kids can survive 8 years in Iraq, good luck to you. Letter number 3, and then closing out. Sign of policy failure. We always like to end on a good note. Sign of policy failure by Jim Gage, Naples, Florida. Much has been written and said about the fallacy of Bush's Iraq war. See, now he's got the brains to call it Bush's war. Too bad the Democrats don't have the brains or the courage to call it what it is exactly. This is Bush's war. This is not the Democrats' war. Nobody had to go to war but Bush. He convinced some Democrats to back him up. He convinced some Republicans to back him up. But he's the one that said, we had to go. We had to go right now. There's no time to put armor on the Humvees, there's no time to put armor on the troops, there's no time to send water, or guns, or bullets, or food, you know, there's no time for any of that. We gotta go right now, right now, right now, right now. So this is all on Bush. But nothing could have more direct meaning than the current inability of the armed forces to meet recruitment goals. Even though our military has lowered standards and increased benefits, the youths of our country have repudiated Bush's war in Iraq by not enlisting in significant numbers. What clearer appraisal could our leaders ask for? And the monkey will tell you, well, it's because I didn't catapult over the propaganda enough times by repeating it enough times. Well, no, you have, asshole. It's been like 3 years now you've been screaming how we had to go to Iraq. And you talked enough people into it, and now we're there, and we got the never-ending quagmire, and it's Bush's war. If we could only get some Democrats to call it that, it would stick in some people's head. Bush did this. This is a Republican war. The GOP, Bush did this. Bush and Cheney, the oil people, Halliburton, Bush and Cheney did this. Drill it into people's heads. Not because it's propaganda, not because Goebbels said to, but if it's the truth, call it the truth. If you never mention it, it's going to be kind of hard to get it stuck in someone's head now, ain't it? One more word on this medical marijuana thing. You know, they might be a bunch of whores at the USA Today, but it's possible for their editorial board to get one right now and then. And they did on the medical marijuana issue. I'd like to read you just a couple quick paragraphs. The court's 6-3 decision was a stretch interpretation of the clause in the Constitution that gives Congress the power to regulate interstate, that means between the states, commerce. Under Monday's ruling, growing marijuana at home for medicinal purposes with no money changing hands is somehow a form of interstate commerce. That's what the lying whores of the Supreme Court ruled, that if you put a seed in your backyard and water it and it turns into a marijuana plant and you pick the leaves, dry them, roll them up and smoke them, you have sold something across state lines. That's what these lying whores have ruled. That you doing something in your backyard is interstate commerce. Even Clarence Slappy Thomas said, if you can call that interstate commerce, then you can call anything interstate commerce. If I drink a shot of Chinaco, that's interstate commerce. If I sneeze and wipe my nose with a tissue, that's interstate commerce. That's what these sons of bitches have done. And nobody cares. Why the hell, you know, when a judge makes a reasonable decision that the Republicans don't like, they set their hair on fire and talk about shooting them. But when these crazy, some bitches on the Supreme Court make an obviously crazy rule, I mean, how in the world is growing a plant in your backyard and smoking it, how in the hell is that interstate commerce? It's just fucking not. Sorry to use the F word, but it's just fucking not. And they know that it's not. But they also know that the press and the Democrats are not going to call them on it. So they can say masturbating is interstate commerce. They can say mowing your lawn or drinking a Coke is interstate commerce. And therefore, they can regulate it. How many Republicans are rolling over in their graves right now knowing that the Republicans of today are using the federal government to control everybody's life? Everybody's life down to the nth degree because it's interstate commerce and they've got a duty somehow to control that. The newspaper goes on. It makes you wonder what the majority was smoking. As Justice Clarence Thomas said in his dissenting opinion, It makes you wonder what the majority was smoking. As Judge Clarence Thomas said in his dissenting opinion, if Congress can regulate this, under the Commerce Clause, then it can regulate virtually anything. Now, a little sidebar. Go figure. Slappy got one right. I have lived to see the day. That warning ought to be a rallying cry for conservative members of Congress elected under the banner of small government and respect for states' rights. Justice John Paul Stephen, writing for the court's majority, told Monson, Reich, and anyone in a similar fix, these poor women have got these tumors going crazy in their bodies, and all they can do to stay alive and stay out of pain is to smoke one, but the government said, no, you can't have any. We're going to keep your medicine from you because it's bad, because the invisible cloud being doesn't like it, because some hand job in the 30s said marijuana was no good. Well, we're going to use that as the template until the end of time. We're not going to allow anyone to be pain-free because some asshole in the 30s didn't like it. And swear to God, if you want to take anything to the bank, take this. The reason liquor is legal is because you and I can't make it. Oh, sure, somebody makes a little beer or somebody can make a little wine or something. But me and you can't sit down and make whiskey safely. Remember they talk about the bathtub gin that would blind people? That's what happens when you try to make your own liquor. So since you can't make it yourself, since you have to buy it from the government, and you do, no matter what you think, now they're going to legalize it because the government gets a piece of the pie. But pot is illegal because if people were allowed, you know, a pot plant, I don't understand exactly how this works, but a pot plant, if you do it right or if you do it wrong, produces seeds. And the seeds allow you to make another pot plant. So it's kind of like, you know, if you get two mice, you get a male and a female mouse, you come back in 8 months and you could have 1,000 mice. That's a fact. Same way with marijuana. You put a seed in the ground and a plant grows and it's got seeds and you can plant those seeds in the ground. Pretty soon you got a field of marijuana and the government doesn't get a cut and they don't like it when they don't get a cut. So instead of saying we'd like a cut and working out a way to do that, they say, oh, marijuana will kill you. It will kill you. And even if you're dying, well, it'll kill you worse. You know, they just fucking fabricate a reason. If they can't come up with one, they just make shit up. That's what Republicans do. That's what the Democrats ought to call them on. But no, they're afraid Mr. Roe wouldn't like that. Justice John Paul Stevens, writing for the court's majority, so told Monson and Reich and anyone in a similar fix, their recourse is to get Congress to change the law. Yeah, that's what dying people can do. They can fly to Washington, hire a bunch of lobbyists, and ask the sons of bitches on the take to reconsider so they can live. What kind of fucking nutty world do we live in? Given the reefer madness in Washington that has led to overemphasis on marijuana prosecutions and the war on drugs, the prospects for early congressional action seem remote. In the meantime, surely federal prosecutors and the drug control agents have better things to do than to swoop down on critically ill people who are abiding by state law and haul them off to court. No, that is exactly what the president did. The president's got a war. He's got an out-of-control economy. He's got out-of-control everything. But he decided he had to swoop down on these poor dying people in California and fuck them. That's what kind of president we got. This culture life piece of shit in the White House. This culture life. Oh, we got to do it for the children. We got to do what's right. We got to be moral. The freedom's on the march. Meanwhile, I'm going to come in and take the medicine away from the dying people. Fucking crazy world we live in.
I don't spend a lot of time working.
To bring you the following address from the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. As all of you are aware, exactly 1 week ago, the Chinese government seized and refused to surrender a U.S. Navy EP-3 surveillance plane, along with its crew of 24. What followed was 6 days of intense, round-the-clock negotiations with Chinese officials in an attempt to resolve this situation. Unfortunately, these efforts were unsuccessful. Finally, early this evening, I made a bold decision to meet with the Chinese President Jiang Zemin alone, one-on-one, no Dick Cheney, No State Department officials. No military advisors. No international law specialists. No China scholars. No translators. Just the two of us, face to face, mano a mano, and to keep at it until we work this thing out. That was the breakthrough. In less than 20 minutes, President Jiang and I had signed an agreement. An agreement, I'm proud to say, that both averts an international crisis and leaves American honor and dignity intact. Here are our chief's points. Number one, the United States government sincerely, profusely, and abjectly apologizes to China for this incident. It was entirely our fault.
Understandably, the Jackson family was very excited when the verdicts were read, and as a matter of fact, Janet showed the jury her breast.
The Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes story still continues to get. As you know, they met 2 months ago in a bunker, obviously 100 feet under the earth. They met and fell in love within 3 minutes and got engaged at the top of the Eiffel Tower. This will stun you. This morning, she gave birth to his child.
Top 10 things overheard during the Michael Jackson verdict. Here we go, number 10. A celebrity acquitted in L.A.? Stunning. Number nine, of course he's nervous. Look how pale he is. Number 8. Oh, finally I can go back to my normal life of Ferris wheels, pet monkeys, and sleeping in oxygen chambers. Number 7. No, I think he'll do fine in prison. Number 6. Are those tears of joy or are his cheek implants leaking? Number 5. You think this will be on the news tonight? Number 4. We, the jury, find the defendant creepy. Number 3. Michael, good news. I just saved 15% on my car insurance by switching to Geico. Number 2, I'm glad we live in a country where prison is reserved for dangerous outlaws like Martha Stewart.
Yeah, it's pretty much a white Christian party.
Psst. Governor Dean, you're talking in a white Christian nation.
They can hear you.
Predictably, knowing Dean's fiery style, Dean's fellow Democrats rose to champion him.
He doesn't speak for me with that kind of rhetoric, and I don't think he speaks for the majority of Democrats.
I don't think that the statement that the governor made was a helpful statement.
Dude, you've been getting your asses kicked for 5 years. You elect him chairman. What do you think he's going to do? You're acting like he's the drunk guy at the bar. Hey, sorry about my buddy. Vice President Cheney, who earlier this evening told Sean Hannity when it came to Dean, quote, I think Howard Dean's over the top. Over the top. Saying the Republicans are a white Christian party, that's not over the top. To me, that's not really an offensive statement at all. An offensive statement over the top would be something like, Republicans all sodomize sheep and drink piss straight from the... Now, obviously... That's not true. I'm just trying to remind people what over the top is. That's all. Straight from the... The situation's been further complicated by Time Magazine, whose cover story this week profiles the prison treatment of one Mohammed al-Qahtani, whom 9/11 investigators call the 20th hijacker. According to a prison logbook Time obtained, Qahtani was made to urinate on himself, bark and crawl on the floor like a dog, and was taken outside, shown a family of banana rats, and told he was lower than them, which, according to the logbook, made him cry. First of all, could it be that the 20th hijacker's kind of a pussy? Mm-hmm.
too weird, man. I think the world's falling apart out there. Do you feel that way? Did you watch this shit? Did you watch the flag burning thing? Wasn't that great? Boy, if everyone showed their true colors then, didn't they? Retarded nation that we are. Scary. People acted as though the Supreme Court approved the flag burning. You know what I mean? Does that mean we have to burn our flags? What did they say that we had to... No, no, no! It's not what they said. They said that perhaps if somebody wants to burn a flag, he perhaps doesn't need to go to jail for a year. Pretty harsh on their part, huh? They said we should burn it. They didn't say that. Does that mean I have to go out there? No. Listen, read, think, calm down, relax, shut the fuck up.
Well, I don't get it. I don't want to burn my flag.
Then don't! People snapped over this. Did you watch that? People were just, hey, buddy, let me tell you something. My daddy died for that flag. Just really? Wow, I bought mine. Yeah, they sell them, you know, at Kmart and shit. Yeah. Yeah, he died in the Korean War for that flag. Oh, what a coincidence. Mine was made in Korea. Wow, the world is that big. No one, and I repeat, no one has ever died for a flag. A flag is a piece of cloth. They might have died for freedom, which, by the way, is the freedom also to burn the fucking flag. Say, burning the flag doesn't make freedom go away. It's kind of like freedom. And also, this case, they've had four of these cases in the country's 200-year history, so don't think it's that big, scary of an issue, do you? One of the hotter smoke screens these people have put down the pipe for us. Rampant flag burning. Tell you the only way, and I don't approve of flag burning. I don't want to burn a flag, but if somebody wants to burn a flag, what business is it of mine? Is it my business if someone wants to burn a flag? Is it? No, it's not. Is it my business what other people read or watch on TV? No, it's not. Thank you. You see, when you talk these things out, they come a little clearer, don't they? They do. That's called logic, and it'll help us all evolve and get on the fucking spaceships and get out of here. Let's go.
It seemed like a really long time before the sheriff got there, and I was trying to get up to where they were, and I didn't know anything. I'm sorry. I at that point didn't think Brennan was still with us. I never felt that he was abducted, that he was in harm's way. I felt peace with the situation, but at that point I really didn't think he could have survived that long in the wilderness. And so when I was going to get into the sheriff's car, I knew they were going to tell me that Brennan was no longer with me, and I collapsed before I could get into the truck. And they put me into the truck, and when they told me that Brennan was still alive and that he was in good shape, my brain still cannot comprehend that. And it's just been, you know, we talk about it. Up there wasn't real. This isn't real. And it's going to take some time to process this event in our heads.
There you have it. Show 77 is in the can. As soon as I end this, I'm going to start work on show 78. I'd like to thank the subscribers and those who dropped the occasional check in the mail. Appreciate your support. We will continue to keep cranking them out. So remember, if you'd like to be on the Big B Show, just call the BART phone number, 918-748-1714. And if you screw up, just start over again. That's how we do it here at the Big Radio Station. 918-748-1714. So get your calls in. You want to see something on the page? Send it to BartCup at BartCup.com. Appreciate the support. See you next show. Bart out.